Good evening, everyone. A very warm welcome to all for the Embassy REIT's first quarter FY 2026 earnings conference call. Currently, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Our speakers will address your questions during the question and answer session at the end. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Amit Anil Kharche, Head of Corporate Finance for Embassy REIT. Sir, you may begin now.
Thank you. Welcome to the first quarter FY26 earnings call for Embassy REIT. Embassy REIT released its financial results for the quarter ended June 30, 2025, a short while back. As is our standard practice, we have placed our financial results, earnings presentation discussing our performance, and a supplemental financial and operating data book in the investor section of our website at www.embassyofficepass.com. As always, we would like to inform you that management may make certain comments on this call that one could deem forward-looking statements. Please be advised that REIT's actual results may differ from these statements. Embassy REIT does not guarantee the statements or results and is not obliged to update them at any time. Specifically, any financial guidance or performance information that we will provide on this call are management estimates based on certain assumptions and have not been subjected to any audit, review or examination procedures. You are cautioned not to place undue reliance on such information and there can be no assurance that we will be able to achieve the same. Joining me today are Ritvik Bhattacharjee, our CEO, Amish Shetty, our COO, and Abhishek Agarwal, our CFO. We will start off with a brief remarks on our business and financial performance and then open the floor to the questions. Over to you, Ritvik.
Thank you, Amit. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today. Before I discuss the earnings for the quarter, I'm pleased to announce that the board has approved the appointment of Amit Shetty as the Chief Executive Officer of Embassy REIT, effective August 1st, 2025. Amit is currently the Chief Operating Officer and known to many of you already as a member of our leadership team. Amit has played an instrumental role in building Embassy REIT into India's leading commercial office enterprise, and I wish him the very best. I will be a senior advisor to the REIT. It's been a real privilege to have led Embassy REIT and been a part of this organization, and I thank Jitu, Aditya, the board, and the entire REIT team for their continued support and trust. I will pass it on to Amit to say a few words.
Thanks, Ritvik. Good evening, everyone. I'm really pleased to lead the Embassy REIT at such an exciting time for our business. I look forward to working with the team and interacting with all of you. The business is in very good shape, and as you will see during the earnings call later, the fundamentals are very strong and we've got a very strong quarter to announce as well. Over to you, Ritvik.
Thanks, Amit. As Amit alluded to, we're really pleased to report a strong start to FY26. So here's some of the highlights for the quarter. We've leased 2 million square feet across 25 deals, up 9% year-on-year. The 2 million square feet marked our highest ever Q1 fiscal quarter leasing. The leasing includes approximately 1 million square feet of new leases at releasing spreads of around 38%, 400,000 square feet of renewals and 700,000 square feet of pre-commitments, which is a real shot in the arm from GCCs, technology and healthcare companies accounting for the majority of leasing. Our occupancy stands at 88% by area and 91% by value, both up by around 300 basis points year on year. Excluding Quadron and Pune, our occupancy is 91% by area and 92% by value. All Bangalore assets are now over 90% leased, reaffirming the strength of our core market, which contributes 75% of our GAV. Overall, 10 of our 14 properties are above 90% in occupancy, including 6 at 100%. GCCs continue to drive demand and account for 64% of portfolio rentals across approximately 100 tenants. Pre-leasing activity led by Chennai has been the clear theme this quarter. Block 10, which is roughly around 0.43 million square feet, 430,000 square feet at Embassy Tech Zone in Chennai, which is scheduled for delivery in Q2, has been fully pre-leased to a global healthcare company that's already a tenant of ours. Block 4, which is 600,000 square feet in Chennai, has been 14% pre-leased, including the expansion option to Dexium. In Embassy Manyata, Block D1 and D2, which is slated for delivery in the FY26, saw an additional pre-leasing of approximately 160,000 square feet, which brings the total pre-commitment for this block to approximately 80%. Our FY26 deliveries of 3.2 million square feet are now 84% pre-leased, including expansion options. Just a quick note on strategic capital recycling and some inorganic growth. We've entered binding documents to divest approximately 376,000 square feet at Embassy Manyata that comprises two strata-owned blocks, including a vacant vintage block that requires significant capex. This exit aligns with our capital recycling, and this deal is expected to close in the coming quarter, subject to conditions precedent. In addition, we've received an invitation to offer from Embassy Developments Limited, or EDL, a potential 3.3 million square feet commercial project in Whitefield. The opportunity in Whitefield, Bangalore, excuse me. The opportunity is under evaluation in line with applicable regulations and governance protocols. In other updates, the 518-key Hilton Hotels at Embassy Tech Village is on track for October 26 delivery. The remaining 2.8 million square feet of commercial pipeline scheduled for FY27-28 is 30% pre-leased, including expansion options. The hospitality segment is tracking in line with expectations, with 60% occupancy and 9% year-on-year growth in revenue and EBITDA, aided by 10% growth in ADR. Given geopolitical events in the Middle East, we did see that some travel plans were disrupted in the quarter, and that did have a small impact on our portfolio, but overall, the markets have stabilized pretty significantly thereafter. The solar performance remains muted due to the lower unit generation, coupled with reduced tariffs in Karnataka. So overall, a very solid quarter, which positions us very well for the rest of FY26. I'll hand it over to Abhishek to present our financial updates.
Thank you, Ritwik, and good evening, everyone. Let me take you through the financial highlights for Q1. Revenue from operations stood at Rs. 1060 crores, up 13% year-on-year, and NOI at Rs. 872 crores, up 15% year-on-year. This increase was largely driven by new leasing, rental escalations, recent deliveries, and contributions from the fully integrated Embassy Splendid Tech Zone asset. We declared distributions of Rs. 550 crores or Rs. 5.8 per unit for the quarter, representing a growth of 4% year-on-year. This was supported by NOI growth and working capital changes, partially offset by increase in interest expenses. During the quarter, we raised Rs. 4,225 crores of debt at a blended coupon of 7.18%, which was largely used to refinance higher cost debt. This included NCD issuance of Rs. 750 crores at a coupon of 6.97%, which is the lowest coupon we have ever achieved in the last 4 years, reaffirming our positions as a top-tier credit in India's commercial real estate sector. Our net debt stands at Rs. 20183 crores as on 30th June 2025, implying a leverage ratio of 33% with an average in-place coupon of 7.59%. Following the debt refinance post-quarter closure, our in-place coupon now stands at 7.55%, reiterating our strong balance sheet position with dual AAA credit ratings. In addition to above, we recently raised a 10-year NCD of Rs. 2,000 crores at an effective coupon of 7.33%. This issuance saw strong participation from leading insurers, pension funds and mutual funds. This marks the first 10-year issuance by a REIT in India, underscoring the strength and quality of our credit profile. Now moving on to the forward outlook for FY26. We remain on track with the FY26 guidance that we provided last quarter. We continue to expect our NOI to be in the range of Rs. 3589 to Rs. 3811 crore and DPU to be in the range of Rs. 24.50 to Rs. 26 per unit. At midpoint, this guidance implies a 13% growth in NOI and a 10% growth in DPU on a year-on-year basis. I will now go through some of the key assumptions underlying our full year FY26 guidance with one quarter of the year behind us. We continue to expect portfolio occupancy to be between 90% and 91% by area or between 93% and 94% excluding Quadron at the end of FY26. Hotel NOI is expected to grow by approximately 9% year-on-year, supported by steady improvements in both occupancy and ADR. Interest costs are anticipated to rise by 10 to 12% year-on-year, primarily due to the impact of the asset deliveries in FY25 and the planned deliveries during the remainder of FY26. We remain committed to delivering on these growth metrics while optimizing capital efficiency and maintaining strong cash flows. With this, let us now move to Q&A, please.
Thank you very much. We now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking your question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. First of all, thank you to Ritwik for holding the fort in the interim, and Amit, welcome to your new role and best wishes for that. Secondly, my first question is to do with, you know, the thought behind divestment of Manyata asset, and if you can, you know, reveal a bit more to who you are selling to, what is driving this thought process, and how should one think about valuations, yields, etc. on this asset, and what does it do to your future thought of at one point of time acquiring more of these assets within Manyata?
Anything else? First of all, thanks, Puneet, for those kind words. Any other question, or is this it?
Second is, also if you can, we can get your thoughts on the divestment of the Pune asset, which was at one point of time contemplated. Is that, now not in consideration anymore? And lastly, if you can also talk a bit about, leasing environment right now in the context of what's happening around the globe. Any updated thoughts would be very helpful. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, let me, we'll parcel this out. I think on Manyata, I'll let Amit Kharche handle that, and then we'll move on to talking about Pune for a little while. I'll start with Pune a little bit, and then Amit Shetty can add on to that, and then move on to leasing. But Kharche, why don't you go first?
Yeah. Sure, Puneet. So to whom we are selling, that is the one thing. We have a confidentiality with them, which we won't be able to share on this call. But for the rationale behind the divestment, it's simple. These are, 20-year-old blocks facing an occupancy risk, and it will require a substantial refurbishment, if we were to bring it back the occupancy which we are seeing in Manyata. So we got an opportunity. Second, someone was willing to pay us, 2.2% higher than the independent valuation. So we just thought, we'll divest this asset and use this use of proceeds for a future proposition, if we were to repay that, or use these proceeds for any strategic acquisition or anywhere else. So that is the plan right now. We have entered into binding documents. As and when we'll be able to move closer to the closing, we'll keep the market updated about the use of proceeds.
And Puneet, just to add, is SSI available on this?
Add on what Amit said, I was saying that these are just strata blocks in two of the buildings, which were some floors, and which the building also had a lot of other strata owners. So operationally also it makes sense to, that also helped us to take this.
Yeah. Just adding Puneet, this asset had about 17 other strata owners, right? And the fact of the matter is that, of the 375K that we owned, 231 is currently leased, 145 is vacant. Of that 231,000, about 105,000, there is an exit notice as well. And, so it just made logical sense for us, because new leasing will require significant amount of, investment plus, the risk of, the holdover and weightage of time. And we just thought that there was a great opportunity for us to recycle the capital, and that's what we thought is the right thing to do for the business. Moving on to Pune.
Yeah, look, let me start on Pune, and Amit, why don't you add on.
I think on Quadron, yeah, we had spoken to the market about, you know, taking it off and maybe if somebody wanted to have it, given sort of the fact that there were a number of issues with the location, the fact that IT services, that was that is a large tenant and, you know, left it and kind of wreaked havoc on occupancy. And I think the fundamental thing was we did get sort of, you know, people kicking it around for a few numbers, but they certainly weren't anything we were interested in. And I, you know, ultimately we just took the call, you know, internally and even, you know, we're having a chat with the board at various times that, look, at some point in time, look, the cycle turns, right? And I think if we are okay with waiting it out. Clearly, I think we've always approached it from, if there's absent a good price for this, you know, we are more than happy to think about sort of keeping it with us for the moment. Pune is obviously expanding. It's doing well. And yeah, while it's not maybe some of the other pricier parts of Pune, at some point when the metro comes in, at some point when Navi Mumbai Airport sort of, you know, picks up, and you see that kind of traction, we could see a turnaround. I mean, we're seeing a turnaround in Noida at this point in time, where, you know, you wait long enough for the asset, eventually the market turns. So I think for now we're content to keep it. You should just I'll be totally transparent. We also just look at the portfolio and the numbers of the portfolio ex Quadron for a bit. It's just I think the way that we think that it should run is a small very it's a fraction of the value of the portfolio and the contributing analysis of the business. And yeah, it's unfortunate that it's reached that position, but I think at some point in time it will turn. But yeah, I'll leave it at that. Amit, if you have anything to add?
I think you covered it all, Ritik, and I'd probably move to the third question that Puneet asked is, how do we look at the overall market from a leasing perspective? Puneet, I mean, look, the markets look really good. You know, there's a lot of activity happening in the market. It's been a very robust first quarter. You know, 19, almost about 20 million square feet getting absorbed. And the supply is actually chasing the demand. The IPCs have projected approximately drop in vacancies as well across the country, which is really encouraging. The rental rates are moving up, right, about 5 to 7%. So I think it's an overall great story for us. And also, you know, Chennai is really firing for us. We've just pre-leased about 500,000 square feet plus in Chennai. We've done some interesting pre-lease in Bangalore, and that momentum continues in both the market. We've done some exciting work in Noida. We've done about 225,000 square feet that we've already leased, and we've got a very, very active pipeline of about 1.5 million square feet, right? And the market is seeing potentially, you know, about 12 million square feet of active RFPs. And, you know, we're participating in about 90% of these RFPs. So, you know, the story can't be greater for us.
Understood. And just lastly, on the, you know, walk down from NOI growth to NDCF growth, you did talk about some bit of interest rate impact. But should it have been that stark, a 15% NOI growth translates into less than 4% NDCF growth? What are some of the other factors and how should we think about this? Because a lot of new assets also came in, right, in last couple of quarters.
Yeah, Puneet. So there are total three parts to it. One is the interest portion. The second one is payment of the property tax. So what actually happens is the property tax of Bangalore properties was paid for the full year in the first quarter itself. So there is that second impact. And the third impact is the properties that we delivered in the last year, last quarter. Now, the non-cash NOI has kicked in right now. However, the cash NOI will kick in from Q2 and Q3 onwards.
You're saying they're not rents yielding per se, they're still in the rent-free period?
Yes. Yes, because we delivered it in the last quarter. Now, the cash rent actually, the RCD starts in Q2, Q3 onwards.
But the interest on the debt you had taken for this, you start paying that now from the last quarter onwards.
Absolutely.
Okay, and the property tax, if you could share the quantum, and should it not be a part of, you know, pre-NOI expense? Because NOI also grew 15%, right? Or,
yeah, so what happens is property tax is, you're right, so it is a pre-NOI expense, but the cash went out, but NOI, the larger chunk was also the non-cash. So all these three taken together explains the difference between 13% of NOI and 4% of DPU.
So non-cash rent versus interest, I would should assume, is the gap between NOI growth versus NDCF.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Pritesh Sheth from Axis Capital Limited. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congrats Amit for your elevation. First, on this divestiture, we are just trying to understand. So these blocks that we are now hiving off, they were not contributing to rents as of now? Or what is the NOI rental kind of impact? Obviously, it will be minuscule, but just trying to understand whether they were contributing anything or not.
So Pritesh, right now, you know, the occupancy is around 8%. And we have received additional notices for these blocks. Suppose that occupancy will drop to around 32%, and we see the rentals in the range of 8 crores, which will be close to 2% NOI as opposed to the exit.
Okay, got it. And this is part of that MFAR block, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Second question on Splendid Tech Zone. I think the first block that's coming up in September saw good pre-leasing. What's the outlook on the second one? Will that also be fully leased before it's up, before it's delivered completely, or 5 lakh leasing a year should be a good leasing run rate in Chennai that we see?
Absolutely. Pritesh, firstly, thank you for your wishes. And, from an overall Chennai perspective, the market is actually really, really hot. So, in terms of the overall supply, there is actually no quality supply in the market. And we are probably, one of those developers who's actually got stock that's actually coming up into the market in the right point of time. Having said that, to answer your question on Block 4, we've already pre-leased about 14% to a company called Dexian, and we've got a very strong pipeline. The hope is that we will pre-lease this, but, we are confident that at least 50% of that building will get pre-leased before delivery.
Sure, that's pretty helpful. And just one last on the cash taxes part. It has been like pretty much in the 5% of EBITDA kind of a range since quite a few quarters. Would that run rate remain like for, medium longer term, or eventually we would start paying little higher taxes once your previous losses gets completely absorbed? So just guidance on that.
Yeah, Pritesh. So the expectation is that for medium term, it will remain similar to 5%, but it will increase by, let's say, a percent in the longer term. For the reasons which you mentioned.
1%, you are saying.
Yeah.
By a percent or so. So it can go to like 5, yeah. 6, 7 odd percent.
5 can go to 6 or max 7. The expectation is 6.
Okay. Fair enough. Got it. That's it from my side. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Parvez Qazi from Nuvama Group. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening, and thanks for taking my question. So my first question, I'm not sure if you've already covered this.
I'm really sorry to interrupt. Parvez, sir, you're sounding a bit muffled.
Yeah, hi. Is that better now?
This is much better. Yes, so please go ahead.
Sure. So my first question is, and sorry if you've already answered it, wanted to get your views on the recent tariff issue. How do you see things panning out for us, especially in the GCC's market? Because there have been talks about global leaders not wanting more US jobs to come to India. So wanted to get your views on that. And second is some progress on the ACZ front, any denotifications, etc. this quarter. Thank you.
Yeah, let me take the first one, Parvez. Just look, I think it's very frankly, it's too early to call,
right? I think these conversations around tariffs generally points to the fact that the U.S. administration is always looking to make a deal, and it doesn't necessarily always pan out that it tends to be a zero-sum game. There clearly is obviously a lot of noise in the market, but I think the market is also learning to deal with that, and it is something that we don't expect to subside over the coming quarters or even the coming year in this administration. I think, yeah, there is, you know, and it's not the first time that we've thought about the fact that, look, could U.S. companies be subject to sort of some kind of conditions about not hiring jobs in India and moving it overseas? I mean, these are also capitalistic corporations, right? I mean, they exist to return, deliver returns for their shareholders, and I don't think it's sort of just such a binary outcome that you stop hiring and you start doing that. Economics of comparative advantage simply don't lend themselves to that. So I think it's just, you know, frankly, while there are tariffs, while tariffs do have consequences, and they will obviously cause both might be inflationary and at the same time could even lead to sort of a slowdown in economic activity and output, I don't think necessarily that it just means that people are going to stop hiring in India. And the other thing is that there's effectively, you know, what we are seeing in our portfolio is that there is a massive migration towards GCCs and companies from other parts of the world. We've got Australian banks, we've got Danish healthcare companies, we've got, you know, Japanese companies, there's British companies. There's a whole host of, you know, GCCs worldwide and across sectors looking to hire in India simply for the talent. So I think there's an incredible hedge that we have in the portfolio against sort of some of the American, the risks to the U.S. Sort of part of the portfolio that we currently have. But even that, I don't think it's going to be, there might be some degree of rationalization in some form. But that, I would say, is normal course rationalization and not sort of structural sort of, you know, fleeing off labor by U.S. companies. On the SEZ, if you want to take that. Yeah.
Sure.
Parvez, sir, we have lost the audio from your line.
Yeah, I can't hear anything.
Just one moment. Right.
Hello?
Ladies and gentlemen, the line for the management seems to have disconnected. Please stay connected while we reconnect the management back. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the line for the management reconnected. So please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Parvez, where did we lose you?
The SEZ issue.
Okay, just quickly recap, Parvez. The total SEZ that we've denotified so far is about 7.8 million square feet. Last quarter, we've denotified about 1.4 million square feet. And in future, we plan to denotify, demarcate additionally 3.2 million square feet.
And how much of the 7.8 has been already leased?
So of that, you know, about 74% is already leased.
Sure. Thanks and all the best for future.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vikas from Kotak Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. The transaction which you guys did in Manyata for 530 crores, you are saying that part of it, 145,000 square feet, is vacant and some portion of the lease portion also will get vacated. Is there any clawback from the buyer in terms that you have to guarantee a yield for a certain period of time, or there are no guarantees from the REIT to the buyer? The entire leasing risk and revenue risk is on the hands of the buyer.
Yeah, so there is no clawback, and we have already entered into binding agreements, so there is no clawback.
And no guarantee of returns on the purchase price.
No, this is a, you know, M&A as usual. You know, once we do the deal, so the risk and reward gets transferred.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vishal Parekh from Kotak Alternate Asset Managers Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, team. we wanted to check regarding the recent consultation papers which SEBI has floated, and with this news reports regarding classification of REITs as equity for the mutual fund schemes. And there's also a certain one paper which they floated in July, which mentions that the REIT and InvITs can be part of the residual portion of mutual fund scheme. So what are your views around that? Is it positive, or it could potentially be detrimental if debt and hybrid funds are not able to hold the REIT units?
Okay, let me start. I think for me, this is my view, I've always thought of a REIT as being a high dividend paying stock, right? At the end of the day, and the way that it's been structured worldwide is that they actually operate as companies. They enter equity indices. They're part of the S&P 500, the S&P 400 in America. They're part of the STI in Singapore. And, you know, I could go on and on with every country about how they treat it. I think the problem actually lies in the way we view it. And I think the problem is the fact that, you know, there's a lot of it. It offers the characteristics, the security of a bond while giving you equity upside, maybe not the way that it does for high growth, but it certainly has, you know, mid-level, you know, very attractive growth prospects. And I think it should be in the indices. And I think because that what that does is it brings in a whole bunch of passive money. It brings in, and let me tell you, global investors, already we're already in the MSCI, we're already in across every passive structure worldwide. So you can actually buy it as a stock somewhere else. So I just think that to make the asset class attractive, in turn, for India, you know, you've got to treat it with that whole thing about being a stock and having that same mind share. Because I think, you know, we get told a lot that, oh, you know, people don't know about it. They don't know about it because you treat it like a fixed income security. And I'm not saying, and listen, I have nothing but the highest respect for the security of fixed income. But I think for this asset class to be more mainstream, more liquid, and also be safer in a way from the way it trades, it needs to have the balance of sort of an equity, the liquidity, and that kind of exposure. Now, does that mean that a debt and a hybrid security person doesn't do that? We can have a carve-out. I'm sure that's what I think we're trying to ask ourselves. How does that happen? We value the response of it. It's totally up to how you have your mandate and your return profile work within your fund, right? I think if the volatility of the security basically sits there and messes up your returns, I think that's not a good thing for you. But at the same time, if there is a way you can participate, because you can assume that, look, this is going to give you X over, let's say, whether it's a GSEC, and then, you know, X over Y on, you know, your cost of capital and on an IRR basis, I think you can still invest in it. But I think structurally for us, we think about this, we've been talking to the regulators for 6 years on this, right? And it's something that really needs to change at some point, because otherwise it's going to be very detrimental to the growth and the liquidity of the structure.
And Vishal, on the residual portion, definitely that is very positive for us.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. No.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, if you wish to register for a question, please press star, then one. Our next question comes from the line of Sumit Kumar from JM Financial Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Congratulations on a good set of numbers, and congratulations to Amit as well, and all the best for the future. My question is regarding the guidance of occupancy, which is in the 90 to 91% range. Given that, the deliveries of 3.1, a large part of it is already pre-leased, you're guiding for an incremental 4.6 million square feet. I would like to know your thoughts on that. Are you being conservative or, it's something that has been built in your business plan that way?
So firstly, thank you for your wishes. From a overall perspective, we have about 5 million square feet of total vacancy, right? And we believe that about 2 million square feet of that is sitting in Bangalore. And by the end of the year, we have another 500,000 square feet of that to be delivered in Chennai. And 2.4 million square feet is in Pune, which is a drag. But, given that we'll be able to fill our Bangalore and Chennai portfolio, we're pretty confident of achieving our guidance on the occupancy range.
Yeah, but I think my question was more that a lot of these deliveries are already, sort of fully leased or 100% pre-leased. It's only one block that we have about 14%. Wouldn't this number be a little more given the run rate that you've achieved in Q1?
Yeah. I mean, when we started the year, we gave this number because of the global tailwinds that we saw, it's just, we are hopeful that we'll actually beat these numbers.
Okay. Cool. Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vaibhav Khandelwal from Laburnum Capital Advisors Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking my question. So recently there was some news of an IT player cutting some 1,000 jobs approximately across its workforce. Just wanted to ask, are you hearing such news from any other IT players that, are in our portfolio? I understand that's like a relatively smaller portion of our occupancy base, around 7-8%. But just wanted to sort of get a sense of how you think about it, how do you think this might impact us in the future if other players do the same thing? Thanks.
Actually, we are not hearing, a lot of noise around this. I mean, obviously TCS made that, but if you see the Infy results, that is very, very strong. And, we felt encouraged by seeing Infosys results. Having said that, like you rightly mentioned, the overall ITES, portfolio is about 8%. And, some of our existing ITES occupiers have actually taken up more space with us. Right, so that's encouraging for us.
All right, that's all. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Harsh Modi from JP Morgan Chase & Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I just wanted to double click on the discussion around risk from some of these discussions with the US, AI, all of that. So I understand you are still getting a lot of inquiries and you are confident on delivering, but are the potential lessees trying to negotiate a contract where they can basically walk out or figure some way of reducing the commitment, or are there any discussions which allows them to have a rethink if need be at a later date? Anything on those lines happening at all?
Not really. All our leases are very structured, very standard. So, our leases have a tenure period with a lock-in that is predefined, right? So there is no claw out of those contracts. Right, so these are all watertight agreements that we have with the occupiers. The second thing that we'd like to highlight is most of our occupiers are actually guys who have fitted out their own fit-outs, which means that they've actually invested into the premises. Right, and having said that, them walking out midway is very unlikely.
Right, no, but as in terms of, and a bad example, but there were a lot of cases when there were hello high water contracts in a different space, and there was a clause which said I pay you X million dollars and then I can walk out of the lease. I forget what's the legal term for that. But is there a request for something on those lines just to create some sort of leeway if things really become tough? Let's say if AI actually takes over, agentic AI takes over. So how are you having those discussions?
I mean, honestly, you know, we've not had any discussions even remotely towards that direction. In fact, you know, I've always been advocating, you know, a lot of AI work is actually coming into India. India happens to be the second largest AI talent pool across the world, right? And having said that, you know, most of our occupiers within our portfolio are fully doing AI and actually they're hiring a lot of AI talent. And that's the conversation that I'm actually having with the CXOs today.
I think there's just a lot of early stage sort of, you know, ruminations and discussions around what AI does, right? I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff that, oh, it's going to fundamentally change the way we work, maybe, but I think it also just means it's an opportunity for people to reskill. But I don't think the first thing that's going to fall, the domino to fall, is Indian real estate and people restructuring, right? I mean, and having these sort of contracts that allows them to move out. I mean, we didn't even see that during COVID, where you actually saw sort of a pandemic. There people were, a lot of people, because India still represented such value for real estate, they kept the spaces. I mean, you've got to realize this is fundamentally extremely, compared to, let's say, New York or San Francisco or London or Hong Kong, this is still, you know, one-third, one-to-one-fifth the cost. So I think it makes, and you can still hire people fast, you can hire people at scale, and it just makes sense to keep this. So no, we're not seeing that. I mean, I think it takes a couple of more years to play out for what AI really means for the job market, but nothing of the sort right now. Yeah?
Great. Thanks for the color. And the final question is a bit more housekeeping. Cost of fund, if I'm on slide 25, seems it declined 35 bps. Is it from annual, the 790 is annual number, or is it fourth quarter? I just want to understand how much has it gone down Q on Q. And let's say, knowing where interest rates are, how much more shall we expect a decline in cost of funds over second and third quarter? Thank you.
So, Harsh, the number that you are seeing, 7.9, was as at 31st March 2025, and 7.55 is as at 30th June. Now, after considering all the refi that we have done out of the NCDs that we raised up to 30th June, now post that we also did one raise, which is 10-year bond at average of 7.33. So that will further reduce this. And now from here on, what will also happen is the loans that we have from banks, which are variable rate. Now, bank loan interest rate, you know, it's not coming down right now. It will take some time. So, difficult to say where we will land, let's say, as at 31st March 2026. But definitely, it should be lower than where we are today.
Right, no, that's fair. Where I'm coming from is, one is I just wanted to see if you could quantify to the extent possible. A range is fine. And also, in case there is a, also just want to understand sensitivity. In case we end up getting, let's pick a number, 50 basis point of cut, what does that mean for your cost of funds? And does it come with one quarter lag, two quarter lag? Just broad sensitivity is all I'm looking for.
Okay, so let me explain it this way. The total debt book is around 20,000 crores, half 58% is fixed now. Out of that, only 2,000 crores come up for refi. So any rate cut from here on will get benefit only on those. The balance 50%, like 42%, there it depends, because as of now, the last 50%, 50 basis point reduction, that benefit also we have not received till now, because the MCLR of the bank has not gone down, still to bake in. But if you are range, it can be, let's say, 20-25 basis point lower from here as the 30th March. But I mean, just we'll have wait and watch game.
Right. That's all I was looking for. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, on behalf of MSC REIT, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.